Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Monday, April 8th, and this is your FT News Briefing. Israel is preparing for a military operation in the city of Rafah, and Google is thinking about making a big change to its search engine. Plus, European defense groups are worried about their reliance on China for crucial military supplies. I'm Kasia Bursalian, and here's the news you need to start your day. Israel says that it's withdrawing troops from the southern city of Khan Yunis in order to prepare for military missions in Rafah. That's near Gaza's border with Egypt. The Israeli military claims that that's where Hamas's last stronghold is, but many Western countries are deeply worried about any operation there. The U.S. has warned that an attack on Rafah would be a huge mistake because that's where more than a million Palestinians are sheltering. The move to pull troops out of Khan Yunis marks an end to the latest phase in Israel's ground offensive against Hamas. Google is thinking about charging for new premium features powered by generative artificial intelligence. This would be the biggest ever shakeup to its search business. Here to talk about how AI could change the way we look up things online is the FT's Madhumita Murjia. Hi, Madhu.
Hi there.
So what can you tell me about these premium features that Google is thinking about charging for? How do they work exactly?
So there's not a huge amount of detail yet because this is obviously something Google didn't announce and we broke via sources. But really, the idea would be that Google would offer generative AI through search, which is asking a question and using generative AI or a chatbot to kind of create answers for you rather than a list of 10 blue links as they traditionally have.
So it's maybe a more thoughtful and more thorough answer than what we're used to seeing right now. But why is Google considering charging extra for that when its whole search business is basically built on being free?
So this is a really kind of tough challenge for them because they obviously have their cash cow, their search engine, which is how they primarily make money. You know, they reported $175 billion in revenue from search and related ads last year, which is more than half of its total sales. So essentially you search for something and you have ads down the side, but even some of the links themselves are sponsored. You know, generative AI is different in that it's not giving you a list of links that you go away and click. It's literally offering you an answer. So that could essentially disrupt Google's own search business too. So I think the idea here would be to bifurcate and still have traditional search with links and ads, but then also have a sort of subscription-based premium type of search where you get these generated features.
Got it. So Google's clearly taking development of AI pretty seriously. How has it been doing in that space more broadly, particularly when you come to think of things like Microsoft and OpenAI's ChatGPT?
Yeah, so it's interesting because Google was one of the earliest movers in AI, but in the last year, they seem to be seen as on the back foot because when it comes to commercializing and turning these models or these kind of research projects into products, they've been slower to kind of meet this challenge. Whereas Microsoft, which backs OpenAI, has already started rolling out AI products. Google, meanwhile, has been much slower to roll out real products. The first thing it put out was a chatbot like ChatGPT called Bard, but that's been renamed and kind of transformed over the last year. And they've also taken almost an entire year to launch Gemini, which is their answer to, you know, OpenAI's most advanced model. So I think they've been reluctant and slow to radically change how they do things because they are currently the dominant incumbent when it comes to search online in particular, which is where AI presents both an opportunity and a threat.
Yeah, and just how at risk is Google here in terms of losing its top position in online search?
Well, Google search is still by far the most used search. You know, there's no danger of that being suddenly usurped necessarily by Bing or even by smaller kind of startups like Perplexity just yet. But I think them introducing generative AI into search in this sort of parallel way might be a way for them to just test the waters to see how people receive this type of new search, which I think is sort of a halfway house to just shaking up the traditional Google search that we all know completely.
And Madhu, what does Google's experimentation here say about how disruptive AI could potentially be for big tech companies like it?
So I think it's been clear from what we've heard from the CEOs of all of the major tech companies that there is going to be huge disruption and change to how tech companies deliver their products and to the products themselves with the advent of generative AI. We've already seen Microsoft roll this out through its Copilot features across sort of its suite of services. Others like Apple and Amazon are finding ways to integrate it. So I think this is going to be kind of the next wave of technological change after mobile, which we've seen over the last decade or so.
Madhu Meetamurgia is the FT's artificial intelligence editor. Thanks, Madhu.
Thanks for having me.
A handful of businesses are dominating the global stock market. Just 10 companies now make up more than a fifth of the total share of the MSCI World Index. That index tracks the performance of stocks across developed countries. The top companies probably won't surprise you. They include Apple and Alphabet, Meta, Microsoft, and Amazon. American businesses, in fact, now make up nearly 71% of the index. The concentration of the market is the highest it's been in decades, and that could leave a lot of investors in trouble. Consolidation makes it harder to have a diverse portfolio, and with so much exposure to so few companies, that puts investments at higher risk. Ever since Russia launched a full-scale invasion into Ukraine 2 years ago, Europe has been scrambling to make more ammunition. But there's a pretty big snag in the supply chain. A critical ingredient in the production process comes from China. Here to talk to me about it is the FT's Arjun Neil Aleem. Hey, Arjun.
Hey, Kasia. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So tell me a little bit about this problem. Europe needs to make more shells, but it needs to go through China to do so. Why is that the case?
Well, in one word, the problem is cotton. There's a byproduct of the cotton industry called cotton linters, which are produced from the shorter leftover fibers from cotton seeds. They're pulped to produce cellulose and then treated with nitric acid to produce nitrocellulose, which is used in nail polishes, plastics, and most importantly, it's the base of modern gunpowder and rocket propellants. Now, China produces some 50% of the world's cotton linters. And industry figures in Europe tell us that Europe gets some 70% of all their linters from China.
And now I think I can kind of guess the problem here, but why are people so concerned about this linter that you talked about coming out of China?
So the Ukraine war has been described by NATO officials as a battle for ammunition. At the peak of its counteroffensive, Ukraine was firing some 8,000 shells a day. It's gone down a little bit now, but it's still depleted a lot of its own reserves, and Europe needs to really ramp up its ammunition production to be able to supply Ukraine with the munitions it needs on the front lines. Now, China is seen by many as a strategic competitor to the West, and across many industries, people are reconsidering their dependence on raw materials from China, especially critical raw materials like cotton linters that's used to produce ammunition, because if that supply, for geopolitical reasons or others, is ever to dry up, then Europe is in a really serious situation.
Okay, so it's two things. Geopolitics is making European manufacturers a little bit more worried about where their stocks are coming from. And then everyone is looking to increase their stores of this critical ingredient, which puts even more stress on those supply chains.
Exactly. The Europeans especially, because they don't have much cotton linters production capacity in Europe, are extremely exposed to this. In fact, Rheinmetall, which is the West's largest ammunition production company, said that cotton linters is the only raw ingredient for explosives that it doesn't produce.
Got it. So there's a lot of potential risk there. What are some of the solutions that European companies and manufacturers are looking at to rely a little bit less on China for cotton linters?
So all the companies that spoke to us about this risk emphasized that they had large stockpiles of cotton linters. You have to remember, this isn't actually a very difficult thing to produce. It's just that Europe has long outsourced the production of these cheap materials like cotton linters to places like China. Now, here's two things they're looking at to try and improve their own supply. Firstly, Rheinmetall is looking at producing cotton linters in Europe, and they're currently waiting to try and get funding from the European Union to produce cotton linters in Lower Saxony in Germany. And secondly, some companies are looking at whether they can produce nitrocellulose from wood pulp rather than from cotton. Wood is obviously a much more available commodity in Europe, but the process has to be a bit different in order to achieve very pure nitrocellulose that's used in explosives.
But both of those things seem like they could take a while. And, you know, meanwhile, the war in Ukraine continues. So I guess my big question, Arjun, is can Europe fix this problem quickly enough? And I guess if it can't, what happens?
It's important to stress that in the eyes of European defense executives, this is very much a medium term rather than a short term problem. The stockpiles are there, supply contracts are still in place. But the question remains, is Europe truly autonomous in defense if China can choose to turn off its ammunition supplies at any time? You know, what happens if Europe can't produce ammunition as fast as it needs to? Wars are won and lost on supply lines. And if Ukraine doesn't get the ammunition it needs, then it's in a worse position than it ought to be.
Arjun Neil Alim covers German industry for the FT. Thanks, Arjun.
Thanks very much, Kasia.
One more thing. The U.S. edition of our third annual FT Weekend Festival is coming up. It'll feature conversations with political leaders, award-winning authors, artists, and of course, our own FT journalists. The festival is happening on Saturday, May 4th in Washington, D.C., and you can find more info on how to attend at the link in our show notes. Podcast listeners can even get 10% off by using the code WEEKENDPODCAST. That's all one word. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.